Hello and welcome to the FWI Monthly Podcast. I'm FWI Web Manager Michael Target, and as a change from our normal co-host, I've got with me Tim Ralph, who's editor of our Farm Life section. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Mike. Nice to be here.
Yeah. A bit like Doctor Who. He's my compadre, John Riley's magically morphed into the next generation. Actually, John's sort of found his natural level, hasn't he, Tim?
Yeah, he's on sabbatical at the moment, so he's away from the office for 3 months. Gone to write, I hear, the great English novel.
Yeah. Good luck, John. And apart from that, we're doing the normal sort of stuff. We've got two features this month. We've got some stuff from the CLA Game Fair, which was going on about 3 weeks ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at the end of July down in Hampshire at Broadlands Estate, which is fantastic, beautiful estate, which is the home of the Mountbatten family.
Mm-hmm. And also, second half, we've got some, it being that time of year, we've got some harvest coverage live from a working combine.
A working combine with the features editor of Farmers Weekly, who you'll know as David Cousins, but is variously known as the Silver Fox.
Cunning. Okay, right. The Game Fair, Tim. It was my first time down there, but you're more of a veteran of these occasions. What were your impressions of it?
Yeah, I love the Game Fair. It's something I've been going to for a few years now, and it seems to go from strength to strength. And this year they had a record attendance. It was scorchingly hot, and lots to do, lots of fun, and all different sorts of people there. That's the thing that always amazes me about the Game Fair. You can meet everyone there, from the Lord of the Manor down to the poacher who scrambles in under the fence. So,
if you've got a CLA membership.
If you've got a CLA.
No, you're not coming in the enclosure, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a nice, friendly day out. And and you were yourself down there, Mike, weren't you? So should we go over to you and find out how you got on?
She hasn't spun. Little Ria.
OK, thanks for that. We're down here at the CLA Game Fair, down in Broadlands, near Romsey in Hampshire. And I've got with me Mike Stones, who's Deputy Editor of Farmers Weekly. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
And Mike is a veteran of the Game Fair. And is that right, Mike?
An old hand at Game Fairs, dating back to the 70s in my home county, Yorkshire.
Oh, excellent. So you can tell us a little bit about this Game Fair, then.
Well, hopefully. I mean, we're sitting on the banks of a lake, and working gun dogs are practising their swimming skills, retrieving decoys from the water, and that's happening as we speak. But that's just one of a whole range of country sports and pursuits that are represented at the 48 Game Fair. There's shooting, there's fishing, there's falconry, there's woodland management, there's food, gardening, and one of my special favourites, ferret keeping.
Yeah, well, we'll try and get a ferret down your legs later.
I'm not that fond of them, but we can talk about that a bit later.
Well, it certainly seems busy to me, Mike, but I'm a newcomer to the Game Fair, but would you say that it's growing in popularity, this event?
It does seem to be becoming more and more popular as the countryside and leisure activities become more popular in Britain. Fishing is Britain's most popular sport, and that's very well represented here. And it's an excellent opportunity for members of the public to come and enjoy country pursuits and be introduced to them as well, to meet them for the first time in this idyllic setting of Broadlands at the foot of the River Test. It's a lovely setting here.
The theme of this year's show is have a go, and hopefully that's encouraging more people to come and get involved, perhaps people who wouldn't necessarily overcome that barrier in the first place. And we're certainly going to see if we can have a go at a few things later. We'll try and get that recorded on the podcast. Are you looking forward to that, Mike? You're going to be a guinea pig?
I want to have a go, yes. Yeah.
Have a go at retrieving.
Not necessarily retrieving, nor the ferrets. I mean, there are some lines that I draw. I'm happy to handle a ferret, but it's not going in my trousers.
Okay. Now, as we've mentioned, it's a very busy event, and obviously it's quite a significant industry for the British economy.
Absolutely. Country sport is a leisure business, but it's also a big business for the rural Britain and the economy in general. For example, I mean, shooting generates 16,000 full-time job equivalents and contributes up to £800 million to the UK economy.
that's clay pigeon shooting and live shooting. It's a massive amount of money. Yeah. And when we move on to horses, I mean, that's of the order of £4 billion people spend on keeping horses, tack, on the kit that goes with them, on supporting them. And it's a massive, massive industry. And that's before we even consider fishing, which I think is one of the Britain's most popular pastimes. And that 2.5 million people enjoyed freshwater fishing last year. Mm. And that generates an incredible 2.75 billion for the economy and employs 20,000 people.
Okay, Mike, thanks for that. Right, shall we go off and see what there is to have a go at then?
Let's have a go, Joe.
Great. Right, we're down at the riverside now, and I've got with me Tim Goutbaker from the Salmon and Trout Association. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Now, Tim's very kindly agreed to give Mr. Stones a crash course in fly fishing and casting.
More course than crash, I hope.
Okay, great.
Right, Mike, you've never had a rod before?
No, right, not really, no.
Right, first of all, the rod is a spring and a lever.
Yep.
The line and the rod do all the work. It's not you, because you see a lot of people trying to thrash it about in the air.
So what? It's not a javelin, then.
No, it's not a javelin.
About.
No, you don't need to chuck it out. You need to use it very simply. The line loads on the water. Look, as you lift it up, accelerate to 12 o'clock, pause and tap forward. That's all it is.
Well, I know, very simple.
Now, should you be able to do that?
Yes.
I'd like you to hold it in the hand. Just balance it gently. Hold it as though you've got a ferret in your hand.
A ferret?
Or down your trousers.
Yeah, no, in your hand. Well, it could be a hamster. Shall we say a hamster? Anyway, you start with the rod tip of the water, you lift up, accelerate to 12 o'clock, pause, and tap forward. You must have that pause. Right. So there you are, you've got the line on the water.
Right,
shall we go again? This time, please. Lift, pause, and tap.
Is it a flick? Is it a definite flick
of
the wrist?
No, it's a stop.
It's a stop.
You don't flick your wrist, you just take your arm up and stop.
Yeah.
Don't down, you go straight forward. Look, we're going straight forward there.
Oh, I see.
Okay,
I
so
see.
Would you like to do that on your own?
Yeah, I would.
Do we need to stand back, Tim? Or
no, I think we can duck. We don't pull hooks on the
side. Oh, not too bad.
Not so bad. That's just
what
you do.
No,
what you do is stop it there. Look.
Stop it there. Right,
if you
I'll
stop it, one, two, 12 o'clock. You've got to let the line straight behind you.
Yeah.
So we pause, one, two, and tap forward.
Yeah.
Okay?
Pause, one, two, tap forward.
Oh.
One, two, here. One, two.
Oh, I see.
Pause behind us.
Yeah. Pause, one, two, and then down.
That's better.
Better.
Yes, a bit more firm stop there.
Yeah. Should the salmon and trout feel worried in this pond?
I think they should, because you might catch something any minute now. Probably a cold. There we are.
That's great. Thank you very much for
Well done, Tim.
Now, there's another cast you can do, which I'll just show. Oh, this is a single-handed rod, but you use a double-handed rod for salmon, which you'll see on the spay casting platform over there.
Yeah.
The other cast you would use is this cast here, we called a roll cast.
A roll cast?
Roll cast, and you've got a little loop of line behind your shoulder, and you just tap it forward like that. And that's how you do that.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. We've got the wind blowing into our face here. Not very safe to do it, so when we have hooks on, we always make sure that we take the line over our shoulder, opposite side of the wind.
Yes.
Which we've done.
Yes.
And what should people do if they want to find out more about fly fishing?
Get onto the Salmon and Trout website, www.salmon-trout.org.
Right.
And contact them, or www.gameanglinginstructors.co.uk.
Great.
That you can get an instructor anywhere in the UK.
Excellent.
On that basis.
And thanks for that then, Tim. That's very, very kind, very instructive. And I've still got both my ears, thanks to Mike's quick learning at casting.
We only put hooks on Saturday.
Oh, right. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right, okay, we're here at the falconry section of the show now, and we're joined by Andy Stokes, who's from Campaign for Falconry, he's representing the Hawk Board, on the Hawk Board. Hello, Andy, how are you doing?
Hiya, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. And Mike's very quiet at the moment because he's holding a Saker falcon. Isn't that right, Mike?
Yes, I'm very glad that I'm not a gull at this point, because I've got a bird that's quite heavy, it's got huge talons, I can feel them through my glove, it's not hurting, but it's a massively powerful bird, I can tell, and it's got quite a beak.
It's got quite a beak. Now, Andy, can you tell us, it's your falcon, so can you tell us a little bit about her?
Well, this bird is 15 weeks old.
Right.
She was bred by me this year. I live up in Portsmouth.
Mm-hmm.
This falcon is a Saker falcon, which comes from the Middle East.
Right.
They're highly prized by Arab falconers for their speed, determination, power. The Arabs tend to hunt McQueen's bustard, or as they call the hoobar.
Right.
The bustard is actually just about the same size as a turkey.
Oh, right. So
it's quite a powerful falcon. Yeah. Quite a powerful falcon.
So how? I mean, Mike said it's surprisingly heavy. How heavy is she?
This one weighs 2 pounds 8 ounces.
2 pounds. Yeah, so that's quite.
Each bird's weighed every day to get a correct balance in its food diet.
Yeah. And what would her top speed be?
Top speed of this falcon in level flight would be 75 to 80 miles an hour. But if the bird was to climb like she did last night up to about 1,000 feet,
yes,
and you drop a lure out underneath her, she's probably going to stoop down at a speed of up to 200 miles an hour.
200 miles an hour, say a falcon.
Gosh. Yeah. I mean, what kind of things are you doing at the show this weekend?
I'm organising the mini arena. In the mini arena, we've got talks going on throughout the day about all aspects of falconry and raptor keeping. We're also doing talks about the actual training of the birds. This one, as I say, it's only 15 weeks old. The last 3 weeks it's been out from its parents, mm-hmm. and I've been doing little demonstrations showing people the basic stages of training her.
Great, okay. And the campaign for falconry, how can people get involved if they want to get involved?
With the campaign for falconry, they're basically like a governing body. Mm-hmm. We try and put as much back into the campaign as possible. They are then funded with the Hawk Board, who sit in Parliament and hopefully keep our sport going. Mm-hmm. But anyone who's got any interest at all, there's various leaflets and badges and so forth up on the table there. You can just go along to the campaign, tell them that you're interested, and they will do everything they can to help you.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right, well, Mike, you've got beads of sweat coming down your forehead now. So
I'm glad I'm not a turkey.
Perhaps it's time to put the falcon down. And
thank you very much, you beautiful bird. This looks quite a big one.
This is a hob.
A hob?
Yes.
Is that a boy or a girl?
Male.
Male?
Yes.
Right, okay, we're here at the BASC stand, at the ferret stand. I've got with me James Mackay from the National Ferret School. Hello, James.
Hi there.
Again, Mike is very quiet once more because I've eventually persuaded him to come and handle a ferret. Now, Mike has got, perhaps James can tell us a bit about the ferret that Mike's holding.
Okay, this is a ferret that looks like a polecat, properly called a fitch, right. Or a fitchet. It's a hob, a male,
yeah.
And he's about average size for a hob.
Mike, how sort of heavy is he compared?
He's quite heavy. A bit lighter than, say, a falcon, I would say. But yeah. I also want to register the fact that the other name for ferrets is shark of the land.
Shark of
I
the
believe.
Land.
And another one is piranha with feet. So consequently, this is the nearest it's getting to my trousers.
The trousers? Oh, what a shame!
But it's very warm. It's a very friendly, benign animal, isn't it? Yeah. How old is this one?
This one's 2 years old. But you see, I think that you're selling them wrongly,
right?
Because you know you're making them out to be nasty and horrible creatures.
Yes.
And this is not good for radio or podcast or anything else. But
yes,
this is very visual. What I want you to do is just put your finger inside that mouth
in the mouth with the teeth.
Yeah, so just stick it straight in.
I've got a poorly finger there, so it might scent blood.
Stick it straight in like that.
There. I'm putting my finger in a ferret's mouth for Farmers Weekly Interactive.
And he's licking, that's
and he's
nice,
licking
isn't it?
Rather than
spit it out. You
they
see?
Are very friendly, yeah. Aren't they? They are.
People tell you that they bite and they're horrible.
Yeah, but if I were a rabbit.
Ah, different, yes.
Yes?
Yes, but your ears aren't big enough, yeah. You're safe.
No. So can you prove how benign ferrets are by popping one down your trousers?
No, I don't have any space.
Have you ever indulged in that? Rumour has it, James, that you've...
We heard a whisper.
We heard a whisper.
You've once
sampled the delights of ferret legging.
No, ferret legging is illegal, of course.
Oh, is it?
It was banned when I was a young tot.
Right.
Yes. Well, why is that,
yes,
then?
Well, because it's cruel to the ferrets.
Oh.
Have you seen... I'm not actually if you want to be stuffed down a man's trousers, but you can imagine it's not very nice
never
for the ferrets.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay, well, that's fine.
So where can I find out more about this?
If you come to our website, which is www.ferret-school.co.uk, there's lots of links on there, lots of information, and of course, if your questions aren't answered there, send us an email.
Excellent, thanks, James. That's great. Well, and what kind of interest has there been at the show this year? A lot of interest in ferrets?
Always phenomenal,
always,
yes.
Always a lot of interest.
In the morning when we first arrive and we start and create and put in the display, we have 26 ferrets with us. Most people have never seen that number of ferrets at any time, let alone in one place. So usually within 5 minutes of putting them out, we have about 200-300 people standing around, so it's busy.
Well, how many rabbits come?
Very few. Very few indeed. In fact, since we've not seen one.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, James.
Thank you.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Right, we've retired to the CLA members enclosure. for a well-deserved pint at the end of our day. And it's been a good day, and Mike's
calm nerves, of course, after the ferret.
And Mike's been having a go. So, what are your highlights, Mike?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the things we did, from the fly casting. Seeing that line go out across the water was really good, and to have a go and be encouraged to do it, I really enjoyed. Then there was the Saker falcon, which was quite a heavy old bird, not to mention the ferret. I'm glad I'm not a prey species, I really am.
Do you think the have a go theme is a success?
I think it's a really good idea to engage people with countryside pursuits. It's not something that toffs do in the countryside. It's something that anyone can have a go at. Fishing is our most popular pastime in Britain. It's a big industry. But there are other country pursuits too, like shooting, like riding, and indeed ferreting, that other people can have a go at and enjoy.
Unless it's ferret legging, of course.
That's ferret legging, of course, yeah. Although, why anyone needs a law to prevent people doing it, I just don't understand.
Yeah, I don't think the UK's prisons are heaving with people arrested for ferret legging, I must say. Okay, well, we've had a great day then.
It's been fantastic. Here's to country sports.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And ferrets.
Great. Right, now back to the studio.
So that sounds like fun, Mike. How did you get on?
Oh, yeah, it was really good fun, actually. Yeah.
Was it? It sounded it, but come on, be honest, give us the inside story. You and the depth editor having a go, what was it really like?
It comes across slightly differently than, I mean, you didn't hear us pushing in front of small children in the queue to get it, to desperately get the podcast done. I mean, the site is so huge that we were running out of time, so we were having to queue jump a little bit. But Mike was good. He was really keen to get involved, and he was fine at the fly fishing, the casting there. He was a bit in awe of the falcon, actually, because it's quite scary.
It looks pretty fierce, doesn't it?
And he just dumped it. Basically, the guy just put a hood on it. He was wearing a hood, but he just dumped it on Mike's hand, and it was there you go. I'm sure there's all sorts of health and safety safety things. And as for the ferret, well, that was quite funny, because we rocked up to the ferret stand, and there was like a dozen or so, you know, really cute little two-week-old white ferrets. Say we wanted to have Mike handling a ferret. He got all excited, and the chap said, yeah, sure, wait there a second, and like unlocked this safe virtually and pulled out what can only be described as a hairy python and dumped it on Mike's arm. It was like all weather beat. I mean, you've met
oh yeah, I haven't had any as close encounters as that, but probably my only two insights into ferrets are one, when I was a kid watching Russell Harty get savaged by one, which as a bit of TV history is only rivaled by Rod Hull and Emu attacking someone, and Last of the Summer Wine, I think he was Compo, the character on that always kept ferrets. So when you and Mike Stone's depth editor said you were going off to have a close encounter with this ferret, I didn't know whether to be impressed or secretly glad that I wasn't involved.
Yeah.
But I think he escaped unscathed. Anyway, he certainly wasn't limping or...
No, but he did for half an hour afterwards. He wouldn't stop complaining about the, should we say, unique smell that the ferret had left on his hands. I was glad I was holding the microphone, not the ferret. I'll give you that anyway.
Well, that sounded like good fun anyway. And I guess it sounds like, Mike, and I hate to say it, but you've been out the office quite a lot recently. And I think you're also up in Essex on David Cousins, our features editor, on his farm recently. So I'm sure it's very interesting. So you're going to tell us a bit about what happened there.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I've come down to Essex here near Braintree to David Cousins' family farm. Hi, David.
Hi there, Mike.
And you'll be familiar with David, for he's our features editor, and he's taken his annual break from his day job to help with that harvest time at the farm, because obviously there's tons to do. Isn't that right, David?
That's right, yeah. I take 2 weeks off every year to do this.
Okay, that's great. And we're going to do a bit of a podcast from the cab of the combine. So it's over there, David, that's right, yeah?
Yeah, the combine's running. We've got 40 acres here of Brompton wheat that needs doing. The clouds are looking very gloomy. Rain is... there's a 30% chance of rain. So can we go, please?
Let's crack on.
Let's go, come on.
Right, so we're in the cab of David's combine now, or David's father's combine.
and we're tootling away, and I believe this we're harvesting wheat at the moment, aren't we, David? It's Brompton, isn't it? That right?
Yeah, this is called Brompton. This is a new one for us.
Was that a feed wheat?
It's a feed wheat, yeah, and it's as I say, it's just started on the field, and it is a new one for us. I think it's probably quite a good wheat, really.
Yeah, is it performing well in comparison to previous varieties?
Well, yeah, it's not too bad on here. This is a bit of a difficult field for us. We're down by railway line, and we have a bit of a rabbit issue, to put it lightly, down here. So we're not quite sure which is to do with the variety, which is to do with the blooming rabbits.
Yeah, I mean, your brother mentioned it was midge resistant, and he said he might keep some of the seed over, so he's obviously quite pleased with
it. Yeah, that's right, yeah, so it's been a funny year weather-wise as well this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, it looks a nice wheat, actually, so yes, I think we will keep some for next year.
Yeah, we're looking away from the rabbit damage up the field. It looks much nicer, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good where you can get away from the rabbits. It was a bit of a combination of the rabbits and the cold winter, really. But it's performed well, considering.
Yeah. I mean, tell us about these rabbits. It's obviously a bit of a serious issue, you know, joking aside.
Well, it is. It's, rabbits are one of those things the farmers always have to deal with. But this is land we took over about 10 years ago, and it's got a railway line running right through it. So we have obviously issues with getting stuff across the railway track as well. But the rabbits, there's just masses of rabbits. And even though we have a guy who sort of rides shotgun on the combine and kills several hundred a year, it doesn't seem to dent their populations at all. And they are just everywhere. Now, the problem is, obviously, is rail track. We're not allowed to go onto the railway.
It's network rail.
We're not allowed onto the railway to deal with them. And they just won't deal with them either. I mean, they came along once and did a bit of gassing, but it didn't seem to do any good. So they're running riot, really. That's the trouble.
Yeah. And there are other sort of hazards in this field as well, aren't there? I've noticed. I mean, you mentioned the railway, but your land sort of straddles the railway, and obviously you've got to get the kit across there.
Well, we have. It's a bit of an issue. This farm is, we've got everything here. We've got giant pylons, we've got a river, we've got a railway. So everything, a header has to come off to the combine to go to one set of fields, put back on, then taken off again for another set. It makes a lot of extra work, but not much we can do about it.
Have you ever had any problems crossing the railway, David?
Well, I've got to be careful what we say here, but it's always a bit... No, we actually haven't. We try and do it by the book, more or less. But I know of other unnamed farmers who cut it quite close. And I have actually worked out that we only have... Once you see the train, you only have 17 seconds to get across, and that's just not long enough to get across. So we wouldn't actually try it, but I know sometimes people do dash across, and it understandably upsets the railway companies.
Yeah. So, what about other varieties, David? You've been all big as a rabbit.
You'll see a lot more like that days out.
What other varieties are growing on the farm this year, and how are they doing?
Well, we've had a lot of Robigus, which is a first wheat, and here goes another rabbit, which, to be honest, was a bit disappointing this year. I think a lot of people have found that, so that one wasn't terribly good. But the funny thing is, Gladiator, we've got quite a lot of Gladiator, which is a second wheat, has actually done really well. And it's actually outperformed the first wheat, which is not what they're supposed to do. So it's the old unpredictability of varieties, really.
Yeah. And I noticed it's not just wheat, you've got some peas up here as well.
Well, we have some peas. So over there we've got beans. And beans are looking pretty good this year. It's been a cold year for sorry, I'm going off my line here, but it's all these rabbits are distracting me, rushing across. You see, there they are.
Tons of them.
It was quite a cold establishment for beans this year. And this is, we're on very heavy land here, heavy Essex clay, predictably.
Right.
But they've grown pretty well. despite that, they obviously the lack of rain since about whatever it was, since about May, means they died off a bit prematurely. We haven't started them yet. We're having to start them today.
Right.
But they'll be okay. It's not a record-breaking bean year. Last year was a good bean year, but it's a brilliant break crop for us, as for many people. So we're quite happy with them.
Yeah. So. Enough about the growing element. How about the kit? Well, you know, that's a lot of people are interested in the kit. What are we currently riding on here?
Well, we're riding now. You'll have to hold on a sec here, or I'll do a little manoeuvre here.
There we go.
Get around this inner corner. Right. Well, this is a class dominated 204. It's not in the first flush of youth exactly, but it's. It's been a very reliable machine for us, and there's not much gone wrong with it. We had a little problem with the brakes on the road. One of the sets of brake shoes clamped onto the disc while we were moving from farm to farm, which resulted in red hot discs, literally.
Right.
But other than that, it's been good. Now, unlike the previous machine, which I won't actually mention the name for fear of embarrassing the manufacturer, but we had the combine from hell before this,
right.
And I don't know what was up with it. It was a second-hand combine, and there was something. Virtually every bearing went on it, and its worst year was the one when I was driving it, and I got used to switching off the combine at the end of the day and smelling that a very nice smell of roasting wheat, which meant that another bearing had gone and it got red hot. And in the end, actually, it made me. I lost my confidence in machinery really altogether after that, because all the time you were listening out for things going wrong, and it's very dispiriting, that kind of thing. We were glad to. It went to Thailand apparently in the end.
Oh right.
Some poor Thai farmer's been cursing it now.
Yeah, replacing bearings.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about combine out in Thailand?
I don't know. That's a very good question. But apparently there is a bit of a trade of second-hand, well, third or fourth-hand combines to Thailand.
Oh, that's interesting.
But exactly what they're doing? Maybe rice. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. And we're riding along. We haven't got a trailer following us at the moment. So we're obviously storing everything. How much of it? What's our capacity?
Well, this combine will do about 14 tonnes an hour.
Right.
And mostly we can get that back to the barn fairly quickly. Again, we're like many farmers, we're farming on two sites. And a lot of road work from here, when we're down below the railway line, tractors and trailers have to run along a long track, go across the railway line, up another long track, and then round several roundabouts and along the road. Now, I know lots of people do that, but the roundabout just up here, we cart the grain round. But I've travelled a bit in my time, but this is the worst, the nastiest roundabout in southeast England, apart from Hyde Park Corner, and I reckon it's worse than Hyde Park Corner. At least there's some lights on that. And it is, the traffic is getting heavier and heavier, and it's quite a work. So, I mean, I say, there's nothing more stressful than carting grain on busy roads. You've really, it's like being a fighter pilot. Each time you go out, you know, you're out on a sort of mission there. Incidentally, along here, I saw a muntjac deer last night.
Oh, right,
we never get those around here.
Yeah,
so it's a good spot for seeing wildlife.
Yeah.
But it's we're in a thoroughly, we're in North Essex. It's a thoroughly urban spot now. And so you have to have your wits around you when you're carting grain.
Yeah.
You can see it's very rabbity up here.
That is completely barren, isn't it?
Completely barren. I'm afraid you're not seeing, not that it's big deal for you, I know, but you're seeing this is some of the worst rabbit damage here. I mean, they're just completely.
Well, it's just cracked, bare soil, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the trouble is for this field, although this is a big field, there's probably several hundred rabbits there along the edge here, grazing away at it. And the crop just never gets a chance to, in many years the crop does get a chance to fight back, but it was just too cold. So the crop simply couldn't, since it started growing, rabbits are out there munching. But the funny thing is, the guy who shoots them, and I've got a feeling he shot several hundred rabbits on this bit of farm last year.
Yeah.
I said to him, what do you do with all these rabbits? And he makes them into burgers.
Rabbit
half
burgers.
Beef, half rabbit. And that puts them in his freezer.
Rabbit burgers?
Apparently, that's very, very, they're very tasty. A lot of people go, ugh, that sounds horrible.
It's an interesting picture. It sounds like a cat food variety or something.
There you are, that's the 70% button.
Right.
The stern German's toast. But it's 70% full. What happens here as well is, again, this is standard on combines, when the 70% thing comes on, the two amber beacons start flashing.
Oh, right, so the chap.
So the trailer drive, so you don't have, we used to have on previous, you know, years gone by, we used to have, you know, this terrific sort of semaphore system where you get off and you wave furiously out and flash your lights and things. This is a brilliant, I mean...
That's really handy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's some clever person, you know, I hope they got a good bonus for coming up with that, because that was it's a really good idea.
No, that is, yeah.
But one of the other things about combining has changed enormously is the communications business. You know, and I know in a recent survey, farmers said, you know, farmers were asked the question, what's the best bit of technology ever in farming? And they said mobile phones.
Yeah.
And it's true, actually, that, you know, in the old days, and there weren't the walkie-talkies either, that was the thing. So you just sat there, so if something went wrong, you'd have to get out of the cab and walk back to the farm or wait till the corn cart driver came out. And now with the and it's actually had more significance than that, because it actually means, because so many farmers have diversified, it actually means that they can carry on their other business while they're sitting in the combine
from
cab.
The combine cab, yeah, or the tractor cab, yeah.
Yeah, or the tractor cab, equally. And I've heard people say that, which is that, you know, it's, this is their mobile office. I mean, I know, you see, you know, you have to sort of concentrate a crop on a bit,
yeah,
on the crop a bit, but when it's standing like this, there's not too much that can go wrong, provided your knife is not too low.
Yeah.
And there's not too much sort of going fairly steadily here, because you're in the cab. Well, I'll probably go a bit faster normally, provided you've not got a danger of blockage at the front here.
Yeah.
Then, and we're lucky, we don't have, some farmers have a problem with, you know, people chuck old bikes and fridges in the corn, and you don't see them, and combining a, in fact, someone the other day was saying, they combined a tyre, a wheel rather,
oh, right,
a car wheel.
Oh, pleasant.
And that can completely wreck, you can have thousands of pounds worth of damage for that. We're very lucky, touch wood, all that kind of thing, that we don't have any of that kind of thing. Because, so it means you can, so you don't have to concentrate too much, so it means you can actually, and people do, you know, you can carry on. I've got one of those little widgets you stick in your ear.
Oh, yes.
And that works very well.
Right, well, thanks for that, David. We've done a couple of passes around the headland now, and I can't help but think I'm slowing you down a bit, and with the clouds getting ever more grey, I think I'll leave you to crack on. Thanks for having us, though, and best of luck with the rest of the crop.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just, you can just hold the rain off until the end of the day. That'll do. It's not looking very good at the moment.
Cheers, David. See you back at the office.
So that was another fun trip out, Mike. I'm glad I'm not, I have to say, signing off your expenses at the moment. But it sounds fun. And
yeah. All legitimate.
Oh, I'm sure. Legitimate. You don't need to tell me that. Please tell me that. No, I gather you, by the sound of it, you had rabbit tea for your supper that night then.
Oh, yeah, there were millions of them. They were a bit scrubby-looking creatures, to be honest, though. Right, well, that's about it for this month. Coming up next month, we have, well, it's that time of year, isn't it, when all the students go off to university.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. And we've got the dubious pleasure of going to Harper for the Freshers' Week to see what it's all about. And, you know, you hear the rumours, you hear the stories. Farmers Weekly will investigate.
We'll be there. Well, sadly, I won't be there because, I think you're going with Chrissy.
Chrissy Lawrence, the Deputy Livestock Editor. Actually, Chrissy Maskell now, isn't it?
As she must be called now, indeed, after last weekend's fine wedding and celebrations down in the Sussex countryside.
Yeah, that was good fun. Okay, so make sure you don't miss that. I'm sure that'll be fun. I've been FWI Web Manager Michael Target.
I've been Ernie Wise to Mike's Eric Morecambe, a.k.a. Tim Ralph, Farm Life Editor.
Cheers.